The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another spring training edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Kind of going to mix it up this episode. We're actually not going to talk a ton of Red Sox, but there'll be some ties in there. We're actually going to talk about some of the worst Yankees contracts or acquisitions of the last 10 years. So there'll be some Red Sox ties in there for sure. So we're in the creative part of the winter where you gotta do shows like this to keep things going. And we'll still obviously cover the developments as they come with the Red Sox, and there will be plenty. So with me again for this episode, Evan Kay, Jason Kelly. Not going to lie, Jason, your middle name on there trips me up every time. Like,
I keep meaning to change that. Yeah, I keep meaning to remove that.
I keep having a brain fart. If it just said Jason, I wouldn't have the slightest bit of hesitation on the last name. But it's like, I'm not going to say your middle name. But but yeah. So anyway, podcaster problems. But so let's go ahead and get into it. Jason, let's go with one of yours, because this is like one of the biggest WTF out of nowhere, let's just outbid ourselves type contracts. So go ahead.
Yeah, the guy I came up with was Aaron Hicks. Yankees signed Aaron Hicks to a 7-year, $70 million contract in the 2019 season. They acquired him from the Twins in 2015, the offseason of 2015. So he played with the Yankees for a couple of years before they signed him. And when you look at his 16, 17, 18 seasons, so 16, 17, he was all right. I mean, he didn't play full time, 123 games in 2016, only 88 games in 2017. It was 2018 where he really popped off. He played 137 games, 27 homers, hit .248, high on base. So he had a really good year. And at that point, he was 28 years old. So I guess the Yankees thought he's finally hit his prime, and now we're going to get one of the best switch-hitting outfielders in the game. And they, for whatever reason, decided to give him not just $10 million a year, which at that time was kind of a lot for a position player of his caliber, at least. But we're also going to sign him for 7 years. So the Yankees at that point decided, we want Aaron Hicks until he's 35. Like, that's how good they felt about it. And look, any Red Sox fan knows Aaron Hicks was basically a dud after he signed that contract. He really was just not the same player, was not playing full time. The Yankees were obviously trying to compete. So every trade deadline, they were bringing in new outfielders to play more games over him. And it never worked out until eventually they had to DFA him. I mean, it was that bad. So this one really made no sense to me, because it's not like when he was in Minnesota, he was like this can't miss, you know, young outfielder that, oh man, what a swipe by the Yankees to trade for. I mean, the Yankees gave up a backup catcher to get him. John Ryan Murphy, that's who they traded for Aaron Hicks. So Minnesota clearly had no problem giving him up. And he had one good year with the Yankees, and Cashman went, you know what? Yeah, here's your $70 million. It was so baffling at the time. I remember thinking, like, am I missing something? Is he better than I thought? Because I don't think he's that good. And sure enough, he just completely dropped off a cliff after that. So I think they're done paying him finally. I think after the DFA and after he signed with Baltimore and a couple of different teams, I think the Yankees are finally off the hook here in 2025. But it took a while. He was on their books for a long time. And man, he gave them absolutely nothing. So complete zero on that one.
So that contract kind of, yeah, I mean, obviously age like milk. Another contract that just recently got signed in the AL East that I feel like could age in a very similar manner is Anthony Santander. Just another switch hitting, power driven type outfielder. I just feel like they were the highest bidder because they had to be. No one wants to play in Toronto for one reason or another. And I just feel like that could kind of age like milk as well. But yeah, I remember Aaron Hicks threw that ball in from the outfield at like 100 miles an hour, and it went all over Instagram and Twitter, and like it was a big deal. And you know, he was like the new hotness. I think that was when they had Didi Gregorius playing too, and they were just kind of like the new upstart Yankees. But it really, yeah, like it just never really panned out. I think he had a few big home runs, but he was also a part of that awful lineup. I think it was 2023. I just feel like he was hitting leadoff for them. And yeah, I don't have any iconic memories of Aaron Hicks. Granted, I don't watch every Yankees game, but I just feel like he never, like you said, lived up to that contract to any degree.
Yeah, and he signed that either coming into or during the 2018 season. And I remember that because that's the year we went to London, and it was definitely that season. And he played the most games of his career that year, 137, only 59 the next year, then 54. Well, 54 was the pandemic year. 2021, he played only 32 games, 130 in 2022 was terrible, 216 with a 330 on base, so that was over 100 points north. But then after that, just 93 games, and then just only 18 last year for some reason. He must have been DFA'd because he only hit 140. But the thing about Brian Cashman, he's a 1990s GM. Like, he has not evolved into the current, generation of executives. And you look what Dave Dombrowski's doing, and he's still, you know, signing big deals and all that, but his team is competitive every year. And I mean, the Phillies are always a popular, you know, at least going to the World Series pick year in and year out. So I think of, you know, Dombrowski has evolved a lot better than Cashman has. And that Aaron Boone extension, oh man, the Yankees need a new voice in that clubhouse. I don't know what it is, but not a good deal. Came out of nowhere. They could have gave him $10 million a year for 3 years, and that probably would have got it done, even if they let him test the market. He's not going to get a seven-year deal from any GM with a pulse. And so, yeah, that's one. I don't know how you keep your job after those deals, by the way. So
they're like the Patriots. They just hire from within and extend their guys until their guys decide it's time to retire or they want to leave. And, you know, it's like that iconic franchise stuck in their ways. You know, I've said it openly and, you know, everyone's going to be upset to hear it. I'm a Dolphins fan. So, you know, I don't want to talk like I'm a Patriots fan, but I feel like the Yankees and the Patriots front offices have a lot of similarities. You know, their coaches stay a long time. Their GM has stayed forever. And ownership is, you know, they do the same thing and put it on repeat every year. The only difference is the Patriots actually win and the Yankees haven't won since 2009 or whenever that was, over a decade ago. So I don't know. I think they definitely need a change of pace. And, you know, the Aaron Boone extension is music to Red Sox fans' ears.
And you look at the outfield, like that's the easiest part of your roster to develop guys. The Red Sox have done it fairly well, you know, the last couple of decades. So, I mean, Aaron Hicks never should have been a long-term guy. You should have at least developed someone. When was the last time they developed one outside of Judge?
They're still trying. I mean, we're still waiting on this Jason Dominguez who, you know, for the last, I feel like 5 years, Yankees fans have been telling people, watch out for this guy. He's going to be the next MVP. still hasn't broken in. So, yeah, they've had a hard time.
Yeah.
The one that drives me nuts is Spencer Jones. Okay. I get it. He's huge. He looks cool and the ball goes far. The guy strikes out 37% of the time at double A. Okay. I don't want to hear the Spencer Jones thing. Like, oh, he's only 23. Like, Roman Anthony's 20. Okay. I don't care about the age. Juan Soto won a World Series and he was 19. Now, granted, that's not every prospect, whatever. David Hamilton's like 40 years old and he debuted. Fine. But we also didn't hype him up like he's Lefty Judge. He's going to be the next big thing and the Martian. I'm tired of it. Neither of them have done anything of relevance. And granted, I know Dominguez got hurt, but you know Spencer Jones can't hit the broadside of a barn. And you know the Martian, whatever you want to call him, he's done nothing for me. So this year is a tell-all year for Mr. Dominguez and Spencer Jones, for that matter.
I don't know a ton about Spencer Jones. I do know he's been viewed as untouchable in trade packages, but aside from that, you know, it sounds like he's got some Bobby Dalbec syndrome going on, but all right. So, Evan, who's your guy?
So I put Jacoby Ellsbury, and you know, we had some off-air debate about this pick. The Yankees like to pay guys for what they're going to do in the next 3 years, but they want to pay them for the next 7 years to convince them to come to New York. Okay, so Jacoby Ellsbury got a 7-year deal going into the 2014 season. It was valued at $153 million. The first few years, as we talked about, were fine. You know, 20-plus stolen bases. He hit 260-ish, you know, a couple home runs. Did the Jacoby Ellsbury thing. From 2018 through 2021, he played a whopping, drum roll, zero games. He played zero games for the New York Yankees. And in that time span, he earned $68.4 million. Now, I don't know Sadon Rafaela's contract numbers off the top of my head, but I know it was eight years and not far off from $68 million.
It's about what it is.
Yeah. So think if right now Sadon Rafaela decided to sit on the bench. Granted, I don't want to wish injury anybody, so we're just going to say he sits out. Say he just sat out from now until, what, 2029, and we pay him all that money? That's insane. That is a horrible contract. I don't care if Jacoby Ellsbury won three MVPs. If he sat out the final 4 years of his contract due to injury and you still had to pay him $70 million after DFAing him in, what, 2019, that's a horrible contract. It has to be one of the worst in sports in recent memory.
Yeah, it was interesting because – it's almost like Cashman wasn't paying attention to when Ellsbury was in Boston because there were injury concerns when he was here. And when you look at his games played, it's kind of deceiving because he did play – like when he played a full season, he played a full season. It was like 140-plus games. But he missed a lot of time too. So there were a lot of years that were just zeros. 2010, he barely played at all, only played 18 games. 2012, only played 74 games. But the years that he did play a lot, he played very well. What would have concerned me about why they gave him that deal was his best year, as we all know, was in 2011 when he hit 32 bombs and, you know, almost won the MVP. His power dropped so much the next 2 years. It was like ridiculous. I mean, the, you know, 2012, granted, only 74 games, but he hit 4 home runs. 2013, before he left, he hit 9 home runs. The power was just gone. And this is a guy who is entering his age 28, 29 season. That's when you should be in your power prime. And it just completely went away. And no one thought on the Yankees to look into that, go, wonder why that's happening. He hit 32 home runs just a couple of years ago. Now all of a sudden he can't hit more than 10. And we want to give this guy that kind of contract? That's bananas to me. Like, that's just, you're not doing your due diligence. That is just your ego getting in the way because you want to steal this guy from the Red Sox.
I was just about to ask that. Now, in this scenario, say he was a Ranger through their system. He came up, won the World Series as a Ranger. Is he a Yankee? I don't think so.
I think
that was like because he was a fan favorite. He's handsome. All the ladies like him. You know, everyone has their number, whatever jersey. I forget what number he was. Irrelevant. I feel like that was a spite signing. I really do. That was like a, you know what? We're going to take your guy. We're going to pay him $150 million. He's going to hold up the pinstripes at the press conference and don the Yankee hat and come in and torch you. And it really didn't work out. And Yeah, that's just a horrible contract. I just don't think he'd be a Yankee if he wasn't a Red Sox.
Oh, I agree. I think if he wasn't a Red Sox, they probably wouldn't have given him that deal, or at least they would. They may have still wanted him, but not at that price. I mean, they wouldn't have overpaid for him like they did. And look, it could be that they thought bringing him to Yankee Stadium as a left-handed hitter, the power is going to come back, right? Because we got that stupid short porch and whatever. But it just it was never going to work that way. Everything pointed to this is a player in decline. He's declining. You know, the power's going down. Eventually, as we talk about with Jarren Duran a lot, once you hit the wrong side of 30, the stolen bases are going to go away too. Unless you're Ricky Henderson or Juan Pierre, which is pretty rare. Those stolen bases and that speed is going to go away too. So it's just all the signs pointed to it. It was just Cashman wanting to stick it to the Red Sox. And he let his ego get in the way, and he didn't care about the money because back then the Yankees didn't. They didn't care about the money. So they threw a pile of it at him, and it bit them in the ass. So
let's stick on Duran for a second. I don't think he's going to decline as quickly as a traditional base stealer would. One, because he can hit for power more than like a normal, you know, base stealing centric player would. And then two, he's a late bloomer. And I think that kind of works to his advantage. He didn't start being an everyday player until he was about 27, 28, right? So if you want to turn back the clock to like a traditional top prospect coming up, that'd be what, 23 years old. By now, they're usually 6-7 years into playing hard and playing 162 like he tries to, and you know, hustling for every ball and diving head first. He's only done that for, you know, about a season and three quarters. He's been that elite, you know, base running machine. So I think that Jarren Duran could actually play pretty well through at least his time here in Boston. I don't think he gets an extension or anything like that, but I don't think he's going to fall off the face of the earth when he hits 31, 32. I really don't.
And Duran is a much better athlete than Ellsbury was. He's much better built. He's built like a house. I mean, Ellsbury was made of plexiglass. Duran is built, and he's strong. So, yeah, less likely to happen to him.
Cora, for whatever reason, told Duran last year to kind of pump the brakes on the stolen bases. He wasn't really much of a base stealer in the second half. And I've said numerous times, if he finds his power stroke, and it looks like he's on the verge of doing it, I mean, that could suddenly, I mean, he could be very viable in his age 33, 34, 35 seasons if he's a viable power hitter. He also hits lefties very well. Not so much for power, but he puts the ball in play, he gets on base, and even though the base stealing kind of went away, he was still legging out doubles where they would have been singles. So that never changed. But yeah, I like Duran's intensity. But I was a big Ellsbury guy. I always, after that World Series, he was a free agent. I was kind of hoping they might get him on like a 5-year deal that wasn't insane, you know, maybe around 100. Obviously, he was a Boris guy. It wasn't going to happen. And they had Bradley waiting in the wings, and we thought Bradley was going to be better than he ended up being. But with Ellsbury, I think what Cashman was trying to do was he was trying to recreate the Johnny Damon situation all over again, you know, who previously was our center fielder. And unfortunately for Cashman, the Damon deal worked out fine, and the Ellsbury one didn't. I wanted to kind of compare that to the Carl Crawford deal, but I would say the Yankees got more out of Ellsbury than we did Crawford, so that's not viable. But if you remember on Sunday Night Baseball, I mean, the clips shows up on Twitter every now and then. Ellsbury stole home on, it might have been Pettit that was on the mound. Don't quote me though. I think that was a moment of envy. And I think that was kind of, that clip was playing in his head that winter. And when that deal did get signed, I was a little bummed because, you know, Ellsbury was just fun when he was healthy and unexpectedly had some big moments in that 2007 World Series when he was in Double A Portland as recently as July of that season. So kind of came out of nowhere. But Yeah, and I guess I'll just kind of segue into my guy, because Giancarlo Stanton, once he came up, we never saw Ellsbury again. And they already was in love with Hicks. He was about to get that deal. And Judge was playing the other outfield spot. So there really wasn't any room for Ellsbury anymore. But that was another envy situation. And Stanton had tons of red flags. I mean, he was injured a lot as a Marlin. But the year that the Yankees acquired him, he was the reigning National League MVP. And I think it was just too tantalizing for Cashman, because you've got a giant in right field and Aaron Judge, who a lot of people thought should have been the MVP over Altuve. I'm a pro Altuve guy, so I'm glad it worked out the way that it did. But so you just got two monsters in each corner of your outfield. And I remember the Red Sox were interested in Stanton, and I was hardcore pro JD Martinez. I wanted JD way more than Stanton. And had we gotten Stanton, I would have lived with it. But that deal we got JD on is one of the best in franchise history. And the fact that he hit 28 home runs those last 2 months in Arizona, that was just too good for me to pass up. So I'm glad history worked out the way that it did. And I think they've got, if you count this current year coming up, they've got three more years of Stanton. The Marlins kick in some of the money from here out, but not a good contract. And he had a no trade clause, so you could never move him. And just another impulse situation from Cashman that messed his team up for the better part of a decade.
I'll expose myself here. I wanted Giancarlo Stanton so bad, so bad. I just pictured him hitting like he does when they come to town every time. It's always on Sunday Night Baseball in front of the entire nation. He hits one 540 feet on the Lansdowne. You're like, well, there's Stanton. You know, I just always envisioned him hitting, you know, 50 homers over the monster at Fenway. But, you know, obviously 2020 hindsight, I'm glad they got JD. That, like you said, that's probably one of the best right-handed bat contracts in the team history. But yeah, I was definitely pro Stanton. I'm not even going to lie.
I mean, I'll give them credit for just one thing on Stanton. The trade, they nailed. The trade the Yankees absolutely won out on, because all they gave up was Starlin Castro and two prospects. One of them is named Jorge Guzman, who I don't think ever amounted to anything. And the other is Rafi's cousin, Jose Devers, who was 18 at the time, and haven't heard a peep out of him. I don't think he's going to crack the big leagues. So in terms of the trade, they made out, because Starlin Castro flamed out and the other two prospects didn't do anything. But taking on that contract and just, again, Stanton 6'6 with a short swing, strikes out a lot. You know how that's going to go. Eventually, he's going to break down. He's going to start missing games. The strikeouts are going to get more and more as he gets older, because his swing is going to get slower. Yes, he can still hit for power. And look, when he runs into one, it's majestic. I mean, it's, you know, don't get me wrong. Like, there are times where even last year, I was like, man, Stanton wouldn't look bad in a Red Sox uniform, because we were just so starved for right-handed power for so many years. I was like, man, I don't know. I might be willing to do it. But at the end of the day, no, I'm so glad he's the Yankees' problem and not ours, because, yeah, that they still have 3 years left with him. I mean, he's already this spring, he's not playing. It looks like he's not going to be ready till June or July. Like, and they're being kind of like very shady and coy about it. Like, he's still hurt. He's still not healthy. So they're going to deal with this every year for the next 3 years, with this guy just not being ready in the spring, only playing half a season, and still somehow striking out 150 plus times when he does play. It's just, I get why Cashman kind of got the big eyes for him, because, yeah, you knew he had Judge, and then, okay, let's add another behemoth in the outfield, and those two will combine for like 120 home runs between the two of them. But the profile of the player is different than Judge. Judge is a complete player. He can play the outfield. He doesn't strike out that much for a guy like him, who's a premier power hitter. And he hits for average and all this. Stanton was never that. Stanton is just, if I run into one, it's going 500 feet. If I don't run into one, I'm going to strike out. That's his whole profile. And oh, by the way, I can't play defense worth a lick because either I suck at it or I'm going to get hurt. So it just was, it was a bad idea to take on that contract and to just have him for that long. I'm so glad we ended up with JD at the end. Like you guys said, it's just, it was such the better move for the Red Sox. He was such a better fit than Stanton would have ever been. So yeah, once again, I think that was one you can chalk up to Cashman's ego. He wanted the big behemoth. He wanted the big sexy outfield of Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton because he had these dreams of, you know, the Bronx Bombers coming back. And what's it done for him? Nothing. Hasn't done anything for him. So once again, his ego got in the way.
I have a thought and a question regarding Stanton. One, they signed someone so big to drag Aaron Judge's corpse through the postseason. They needed someone to carry the boats. And then two, I forgot my question. Come back to me.
That's a Cushman move. I'll say this. The last Red Sox game I went to was 2021 before I moved to South Carolina. It was in September, right before we went on that postseason run. And, you know, we had no idea we were going to go on that run. And we had lost to the Yankees the night before. I went to two games back-to-back. That's the one Charlie and I went to. Evaldi just got buried right away in the first or second inning. So the second game's more competitive. The Red Sox led it and led it and led it all night. Nick Pivetta pitched an outstanding game. And he'd been, I think they'd had him in the bullpen. They just didn't. He was like the fifth starter and just it wasn't going well, but he pitched pretty well that night. And then they took him out for Darwin's in Hernandez. And Hernandez comes in, walks the bases loaded. It was the seventh inning. Stanton comes to the plate and just launched one. And we were down by at least three or four runs at that point. And then we all had to sit through Sweet Caroline following the Stanton home run. That was just so bad.
A true Red Sox experience.
Yeah, exactly. Do y'all think that Stanton plays another game? I'm on the side where I don't know if he does, to be honest with you. I think he might call it a career. I just, this was so weird and so out of nowhere. And they're already saying he's going back for further testing on his elbows and I don't know. And the Yankees have those two, you know, the two big prospects coming up and they have Bellinger and, you know, Jazz can play outfield. They have outfield depth. They're already paying him regardless. But like you said, the Marlins are going to kick in some money. He has both elbow tendonitis or whatever it is. I wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't really suit up again.
Well, so Ellsbury. The one take I didn't give with Ellsbury that I did on the pre-show was it was like they put him in the witness protection program because Ellsbury's numbers, as I went over, weren't terrible that final year. Like, you don't look at those numbers and say he's completely washed. And so I think Stanton's come to that point. He's got exactly 3 years left, just like Ellsbury did, similar money. And yeah, they don't, I mean, you look at the Yoshida, we think we got big problems with Yoshida. You know, and but he's way more viable than Stanton is. So I think it's extremely realistic that Stanton never plays another game as a Yankee or maybe ever.
Yeah, the only question I would ask is if he retires because of injury, what happens to the rest of his money? Does he still get all of it? Do the Yankees get off the hook? Like, I don't know what the MLB.
He can't retire. Pedroia didn't retire, I don't think. Until the money was
so he's basically out. Just on IR for the next 3 years or IL.
That's what happened to Ellsbury too. He was just like on, I don't know if he, I don't think he was on the 40 man. I think he was just on like the, you know, the long-term DL at the time, now IL.
Well, they can release 70. Him though, and he's still going to get paid. That's
whatever the contractual or the roster situation would be. He just couldn't officially retire. That's pretty much. Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if I were him, though. I mean, I would try to get as healthy as possible because he's, I mean, it's a lot, but he's 71 homers away from 500. Don't you think that he'd want to try to at least get, I mean, if he plays for three more years and he hits 25 a year, he gets there. It's just 25 is a low number for him when he's healthy. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if he hangs it up, but if I were him, I'd want to get that 500 milestone. Just I would do everything my damnedest to get there.
Do you
think he has a Hall of Fame case?
Well, that's what I was just looking at. So I think that is enough home runs to do it. Career 345 on base. I wouldn't say that's quite elite, but it is very good. How many runs batted in? Wow.
What's his WAR?
44, according to Baseball Reference, which isn't super high. He also only has 1,100. I don't know. Maybe he gets in, but I wouldn't say it's a slam dunk.
But also, he probably needs a few more years. With those numbers, he's got an MVP and a five-time All-Star. The MVP will help. You got an MVP, that's sure. A Hall of Fame case.
Playing in New York definitely helps, too. If he stayed in Miami, then no. Yeah, I don't know. I think he needs a few more years, like you said, Jason. If he hits, up to 480 and then gets his WAR up to the 50 mark, then I would say he's probably not a first ballot, but he's probably going to get in. But as it sits right now, I'm not overly convinced. I think he kind of has a negative, vibe around him just because of the injuries and the defense and whatnot. So I think it would take some stat accumulation, but he definitely has a case.
And, a DH for part of his career. I know Poppy is in, and so is the Mariners guy there that was a DH. But
Martinez,
yep. So I don't know, but it's interesting. I think the Yankees are going to have a bad season. I just feel like they're going to. I could be wrong.
I do, too.
They've got like I said, there's a culture problem, and I don't – it's hard to put your finger on exactly what, but it's a very stale clubhouse, and I don't think they're going to back to a World Series anytime soon. They got there last year because the American League was so bad. They had to, beat the Guardians in the LCS? And
the Mickey Mouse run. I get so much crap on Twitter. You played the Tigers, who were had a 0.5 chance to make the playoffs, and the Guardians, who do the same thing every freaking year. Okay, that was a Mickey Mouse playoff run, and then you got exposed by a real baseball team the second that you played one in the World Series. And not to mention, the main reason that they got there is on the other side of town. Aaron Judge disappeared. Giancarlo Stanton lifted too many weights or whatever. Okay, Gerrit Cole is 34 years old. Max Fried is Max Fried. He's not going to be your guy. They don't have what they need to be a World Series contender, in my opinion. Jazz Chisholm, I've never seen it. I don't get it. He has a fun name. If his name was Mike Smith, I don't think we'd be talking about Jazz Chisholm like we do. He's fine. He's a 3-WAR player in a healthy season. But newsflash, he's put up 3-WAR, I think, one time in his career. But he was on the cover of the show, and, he does all the fun things that get all the attention from the younger crowd. He's nothing. In terms of a superstar, Cody Bellinger, a lot of ifs. Paul Goldschmidt is 55 years old. I just don't see it. They're relying on rookies. Austin Wells is good. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they're in the 80s for the win total. I really wouldn't. They don't do anything for me.
I could see Bellinger having, I don't want to say exactly a Joey Gallo type year, but being similarly a bust.
He's a huge
wild
pendulum.
Card. Yeah.
Yeah. If he's good, then they're probably going to be good. But if he's hitting 200 with 15 home runs, then they're toast. But again, I don't want to say that because honestly, out of their acquisitions, I'll include Jazz in that. I think Bellinger is the one I'm most, hopeful for a bounce back. Not hopeful, but I can see it, with the short porch and, playing center field and, just kind of, I don't know. I could see Bellinger. I've never been a Jazz Chisholm guy, and Paul Goldschmidt, you had a hell of a career, but that just feels like Jose Abreu all over again for the Astros.
I'm a little more optimistic for him. I could be wrong, but yeah, we'll see. All right. Well, I'll just mention a few more as honorable mentions here. Brian McCann was given a 5-year deal worth almost $90 million. Marcus Stroman pitched 2 months on his 2 or 3 year deal. Clubhouse cancer his whole career. That's why nobody wants him long term. And, you know, DJ LeMahieu also, I mean, they got him for 2 years because they couldn't get it done with Machado. He was amazing for those 2 years, and they couldn't just let him walk. They couldn't just be like, thanks for the 2 years, and, you know, we're glad we got those out of you. And then they gave him, what, a 5-year deal, and the dude can barely walk. He's got, like, foot and ankle problems, so... So those were a few more we would have got to, but we will wrap on that. Probably be back Sunday night to cover what took place throughout the weekend. Any updates in terms of injuries or expectations for prospects, all of that. Everyone have a great weekend. Take care.